What is up, everybody? Adrian M. Gibson here. What you're about to hear is the audio version of a live author panel recorded during TBRCon 2024, the latest edition of FanFiatic's all-virtual annual science fiction, fantasy, and horror convention, which streamed live between January 21st and January 28th, 2024. FanFiatic and TBRCon had the pleasure of hosting 25 amazing author panels, and we're so happy to be able to provide the audio for you for free here on the podcast feed. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy this fantastic TBRCon 2024 author panel.
Welcome everyone to TBRCon 2024. This is our SPIFBO. Is it SPIFBO or SPFBO? I never know how to pronounce it. SPIFBO 9 panel. We're off to a great start already. We are here with our finalists, myself included. My name is Connor M. Kaplan, and I will be moderating this thing. I just want to start having everyone introduce ourselves. You could all give me your name, the book you wrote, and your favorite character in that book. And we'll just go around in like a circle or whatever. We can start with RK.
Sure, yeah. RK and my cat, Leia. She will make an appearance several more times. I am RK Ashwick. I wrote A Rival Most Vile, Potioneering for Love and Profit. And while it's rude of you, oh my God, cat. Rude of my cat, and rude of you to make me choose between my children. My favorite is Ambrose Beak.
Perfect. Go this way, right there. Wait, no, this way.
I was gonna pick on you next.
Well, I'm going next, so you
I
go.
I'm gonna call it out at random.
Pick you someone else. This? I haven't prepared for this.
All right, let's skip to Wen.
All right, great. I am Wen Raven, and I wrote Master of the Void. I came prepared. There we go. This is my debut, epic fantasy novel. And of course, I love all my characters because they're all tiny pieces of myself. But I'm going to say my favorite minor character is my librarian because he's just quirky and fun and nobody knows how old he is. And he's just always been there in the library. And then my favorite major character and my favorite character to write is Ori Ormond. Because he just kind of came the most naturally to me, even though he took on his own life and attitude. So that's my favorite.
All right. Clayton, you want to go?
Yeah. My name is Clayton Snyder. I wrote Cold West, and my favorite character was obviously Will Cutter because everybody else just kind of dies.
Wow.
Spoilers?
Right out the gate. Jacqueline, you want to go?
Okay, I'm Jacqueline Hagen. I'm the author of The Wick Wire Watch, and that is my dog barking her head off in the background. You hear her? Apologize. And like Wend, I definitely cannot pick my favorite character, but my favorite to write would be Caradoc, just because he's so unpredictable, but that would be my pick.
Ed, are you ready? Or should I jump
up? Yeah. I was. I just, for some reason, I had like forgotten what book I wrote. But no,
Oh man, that's relatable.
Story of the Beast, and my favorite character to write is probably Phobos Lend. He's a gnome, and it was just to get more gnome representation in fantasy, really.
Oh, perfect. You gotta have that. Katie, do you want to go?
Yes. So I am K.E. Andrews, or Katie, and I wrote Hills of Heather and Bone. I can't hold it right. Favorite character... I don't know. I'm going to go with Percy. It was a toss-up between the chicken and Percy. The chicken was more fun to write, but I'm going to go with Percy just because he's got a lot of the same hobbies that I do. I like gardening, so relatable.
That sounds lovely. Ryan, do you want to go?
Yeah, my name is Ryan Kirk. I'm the author of The Last Fang of God, and mine is actually a pretty simple one. I've got a father figure named Kaylin and a daughter named Sasha. And the father figure, Kaylin, was definitely more fun for me to write. I am not sure how good of a job I did getting in the head of a teenage daughter.
You did great. I'm proud of you. Josiah, you're up.
All right. I am Josiah, a.k.a. JDL Roselle, and I wrote The Last Ranger. I can't really choose a favorite character, of course, but one of them is a shape-shifting sort of dryad character named Rowan Walker, which somebody actually named for me.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I am CM Kaplan. I wrote The Fall Is All There Is, genre blending weird mashup. And my favorite character is probably Fabrian, because he's the biggest, hottest mess anyone in this entire book. It's a delight. And so we're going to start with a fun question. And then once everyone who takes us seriously has left the chat, we'll delve more into like the book writing stuff. Oh man. Okay, so we're starting with the first question is, if you were to recast your books with Muppets, who would play each character and who would you cast as the one remaining human? Do you want to go in the same order we did last time, or does anyone want to volunteer to go first?
I would say opposite. I want to torture Josiah. And also go ahead. I love
that idea. Let's do that.
For context, everybody, they know that I don't know anything about the Muppets, so this is total shot in the dark. All right, we'll go for it. My protagonist Leyen is Kermit, because Kermit's kind of the protagonist of the Muppets, maybe. Her horse, Feral, is Miss Piggy. Rowan Walker, the dryad that I was talking about, is Gonzo. And her best friend, Isla, is the human, because she keeps everybody in order. How'd I do? Does that make sense?
You did great.
I think that works. Okay. I think that works. That's even pretty close to the characterization.
I really enjoy that this is question is starting off with the two of us who have no knowledge about the Muppets whatsoever. So I only have the two main characters. I have Kaylin and Sasha. And between the two of them, I decided, after much deliberation, that I would keep Sasha as the one human character, only for the reason that I want to see Kaylin getting in all of his big fights as a Muppet. I'm imagining a little bit of like Baby Yoda sort of things, like flipping and flying around with lightsabers and stuff. And so
I enjoy that, actually.
It is only for humor's sake that I want Kaylin to be a Muppet. I had to Google who the Muppets were and who was a part of them. And I decided that maybe Sam the Eagle could be Kaylin, just as a deep voiced,
you know,
eagle.
Oh, yeah.
I've really got nothing more than that. So
no, that's perfect.
You that's did what great. I'm going with.
Thank you too for doing this, despite knowing nothing about this. Stick with us, we'll get you through it.
Wow. Okay. So I would say Morana, my main character, is going to stay human just because she's the tallest person in this book. So I think it'd just be really funny for high comparison. Percy would probably be Kermit. The chicken, since there is actually a Muppets chicken, Camilla the chicken, would be more Henna. So we're going with that. Anstis, who is her best friend, would be Miss Piggy. And then the antagonist, Captain McAddo. I would say Gonzo, because I really just don't know of any bad Muppets. I just think it would be funny as Gonzo playing a villain. But there's a lot of characters in the book, so that's the main cast.
I enjoy that, actually.
I want to see Gonzo as a villain.
Yeah, Gonzo.
You're right. Oh,
man. I've never what seen Gonzo as a villain. Honestly. Jacqueline, do you want to go?
So I was thinking about this. So I think all of my primary characters would probably have to be human, but all of the secondary and tertiary ones could all be Muppets. And I decided that I would definitely want Gonzo and Rizzo to be doing their Muppet Christmas Carol thing and narrating events to the audience, narrating Frozen.
That's such a good technique.
Yeah, all the asides and all the inner thoughts. And they could keep their costumes because mine is set in 19th century Victorian England, so it's the same vibe.
Oh,
that's what I would totally pick.
Perfect.
Yeah, you could import a few lines from the book that way, I think.
Yeah, same music, everything.
I like that. Clayton, what did you get?
I cast Carl Urban as Will Cutter.
And everybody
else is Muppets with Ratso Rizzo as the antagonist.
Oh, that's good. I like that a lot. Oh, man. Grizzo would make a great antagonist. Holy shit. It's just dawning on me. When, what did you come up with?
All right. So I'm glad that everybody shares my love of Gonzo, because here comes my answer. My answer is that my entire cast would be played by Gonzo, but many versions of Gonzo dressed up in different costumes, in which Master of the Void then becomes like an epic odyssey of self-discovery, where Gonzo reflects on like the aspects of his inner self and either defeats the evil inside or embraces it. And the only human would be Locus, the librarian, because I don't trust Muppets with ancient scrolls.
Oh, you're on the next level.
We should have gone the other way around, damn it. That was my plan.
No.
My book is like already like 99% dog people, so I had to find like Rolf the dog. I can't remember his name. So I just have Rolf the dog doing all of them, but wearing like different outfits. But then I thought it would be funnier, since they're all women, to have Miss Piggy doing it, and then have Rolf the dog as the one non-dog person character, and then have a human as Phobos, but scale him down so he's like really little and all the Muppets are really big. But yeah, I actually had to Google who the female Muppets were, because they're all women, and I was like, look, like there's four, I think.
Oh my god,
they're yeah. They're a bugger yeah. all, eh? And so like maybe Miss P. Yeah, just have her do all the roles.
Yeah, I like that.
Yep. Okay, I have a list for mine. If we're going with it can only be one human for Rival Most Vile, I think it would be Sherry, the like elderly armor who's like the grandma figure and like doling advice to everyone. And she's just doling advice and like managing all of the Muppets. And so in that case, Ambrose would be Sam Eagle. Eli would be Rizzo, because I guess Rizzo was like the most charismatic one. I don't know. It was either Rizzo or Kermit. Dawn, there aren't any many girl Muppets. And so it'd be either Janice from the band or Miss Piggy. Grimm would be Bobo the Bear. Banneker would either be Gonzo or Animal. So Banneker's like the like wacky artificer. And then if we're going with a version where they can be more than one human, it would be both Ambrose and Eli, the love interests, as the two humans, and then everyone around them. So like all the other merchants, all the other customers, they're all Muppets. So that would be a fun version as well.
Yeah, I like that a lot, actually. I have a whole list I wrote out in advance. I have for Peter, I did Animal because I needed chaos personified. Avram, I went with, I don't know if anyone's even going to know this, I went with Bunsen Honeydew.
Yeah.
Closest thing I could get to like a mad scientist. I couldn't think of many funny ones for Edgar, so I just did Rizzo the Rat. Mercedes was going to be the one human, also because I couldn't think of a funny one. And I was like, you know what? Amelia Clark has already played like royal noble people, and she's about the right age. So I went with that. For Desmond, I casted Gonzo. Fabrian, I made Miss Piggy because it seemed like he has that sort of diva energy. Havlin, I did Sam Eagle. Annalise was Kermit. And for Peter's mom, I did Statler and Waldorf. Together.
I wish I could have fit in Statler and Waldorf and Honeydew and Beaker into mine, because I love Beaker.
Oh my god, should have put Beaker on there somewhere. That's such a good pick.
Meat.
Makes it easy to write the dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Oh god, what was the next question? I have to scroll up to find it. I already did the Muppets one. Oh, that was it.
That was all the questions. That was it.
Yeah, that was the only question.
Forever now.
And that was it. There's nothing else. This is fully going to be improvised from here on out. Actually, if anyone wants to ask any questions in case I run out, I think we can highlight that in like the chat or something if I run out of anything. The other one I think I wrote down was there's a lot of talk, I think, in this year about how I think I'm quoting Esme, who said that it's like, I'm blanking on the name of the thing, a food that you either really love or really hate. And it seems like there's a lot of people who are highlighting that the books this year are
Marmite.
That was it. Thank you.
Yeah.
It was on the tip of my tongue. Thank you so much. That was going to bother me the rest of this thing. It seems like these books are filling very specific niches, and I'm wondering what you think you're bringing to your books that makes it sort of different or unique in some way?
Don't start with me.
We're gonna start with you.
You're gonna start with me?
Yeah, I'm gonna start with you. We're gonna keep going reverse order every time.
Got it. Let's see. So I write in cozy fantasy romance. I only have two books in the genre, so it feels weird for me to be giving advice. But one of my favorite things about the genre is that you can explore adventure and beauty and meaning in smaller plots. It doesn't have to be like a huge save the world plot. And there's a lot of great opportunity to explore like more personal relationships. And I don't know, I think there's room to be cozy and touch on heavy topics. And so I would encourage someone to just pick things that resonate with you and try to explore that as a part of writing cozy fantasy. Cause I think, oh, hello, Leia. I think sometimes it gets a bad rap for being like empty or just too light. And I don't think it has to be that way, but maybe that's just me.
No, I think Quenby Olson, I think I'm in her second, or Miss Percy had an aside for things that are cozy doesn't necessarily mean that they're devoid of meaning. Like that's something that gets lobbed at romance a lot in a number of ways. But you can still write incredibly gorgeous stuff about while writing romance. It's like, I don't think you need to necessarily be dark to be taken seriously.
Right. Yeah, like that. If you don't mind me popping in there too, yeah, Orkanomics is pretty cozy fantasy too, and there's like self-harm and like, you know, political machinations and like people getting discriminated against, so you know, like there's a lot of heavy topics in that one too, so
yeah,
totally agree.
Yeah, you can do low stakes and still sort of have like get into a great deal of meaning. Ed, did you want to go?
Yeah, mine's sort of a similar thing in that, like, my books say it's like a coming of age story, but it's like grim, but it's also incredibly manic, and so it's kind of like the opposite end of the tail side of the coin, whatever the saying is, where it's like I wanted to write something dark but still have it whimsical and fun as well, like because people find a way to joke and laugh and stuff even in like really miserable times or whatever. It doesn't have to, I'm not a huge fan of it being super dark, but without any of those little bits of humor or whatever to bounce that back to the, I don't know, flip your emotions around. But I don't know, like that whole Marmite thing as well, like saying like, you know, you'll either love it or hate it. I think that just depends on whether or not you stick to a specific genre anyway. It's just like, you know, this competition's made me read so many different genres that I would never think to.
Oh yeah.
You know, like I'm finding things that I really like. Yeah. Like I never really thought I'd like romance and stuff like that, but you know, it's still fun.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah.
There was a couple of finalists that introduced me to fantasy, romantic fantasy. I think, Legacy of the Brightwash being like the big one from a previous year. Yeah. There's a lot of different ways, a lot of different genres that seem to have done well, especially in the last few years. They're sort of off the beaten path or whatever.
Yeah.
When did you want to go?
Sure. So plot wise, I can't really talk about what makes my book unique because it's a really big spoiler. So instead I'll kind of shift over to kind of what makes my book maybe not unique, but kind of the purpose of why I took the path that I did with it. I wanted to write a book that kind of helps to fill the need out there for epic fiction and fantasy that adults can enjoy, but then also hand to their children or a young friend and recommend it to them as well. And that can kind of be cross-generational in enjoyment level, which I don't know if I succeeded or not. I mean, I have a lot of fans of very different ages, from like 8 years old to people in their 70s. And that was what I kind of wanted to do, because it's a really special thing to me to be able to share a love of books in my own family. I have a 9-year-old. And so like when I write a chapter, we have a dramatic reading in our house and everybody gets to listen to it and critique it. And it's kind of like the first step in my editing process. So it's really fun to be able to kind of share something I'm passionate with my child as well. So
I love that a lot. That's
really
that's
cute.
Wonderful. Oh my god.
Who gets the awesome. Best critiques? who gives the best critiques of your family?
What?
Who gives the best critiques when you do?
Oh, who gives the best critiques? Oh, that's hard. Some I would say my son is the biggest cheerleader, but he can also be the quickest to catch something that, like, continuity wise that I maybe wasn't thinking of, because he keeps all the details in his brain. And then I think my husband is probably the quickest to question me about, like, something in my magic system, which is really good. It keeps me on my toes there. That's really
cool. Is your family available for developmental editing services?
I can speak with them about that. Yeah.
Oh man, that's really cool.
It's really great because they catch even just the smallest things. And when I went to edit Master of the Void, it was like such a quick process because so much of it had been done during the reading the chapters. So
does it happen in the middle of the reading, or do you like reconvene later or something like that?
We have to have silence during the chapter reading, and then I open the floor for questions afterwards.
Oh, that's incredible. I like that. Sounds a like lot. A pretty
cool. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Clayton, did you want to go?
Boy, what do I bring to my books? Sadness and anger. That's pretty much what's packed into my books. I don't know. I kind of try to talk about things that are painful to talk about, but that are real, as far as things that we may have to deal with, but we don't like looking at. You know, there are ugly things in this world that we tend to shy away from. And it's not always easy to deal with. And I try to address those in a certain way, I guess. You know, the things that the injustices that happen in life. So
yeah. I'm reading your book now, and it's just like, oh god, it's such a brutal read, but it's so like, it's so cathartic in a way, where it's like, you're not having it's bleak, but in a way that's sort of like, you're not having a bad time with it almost. I guess I'm defining masochistic now that I think about it.
Yeah, it's not fun, but it is
very compelling.
Yeah.
Ryan, what about you?
Yeah, in terms of the question, I have written widely across the genres, but I think that one of the things that I think is really cool about fantasy, and I think we've really seen that a lot this year with this competition, is that it is very expansive, and it is becoming perhaps even more so as independent fiction grows. And so it allows us to play in a lot of different sandboxes, which has been fun and perhaps a nightmare for some of the reviewers who are reading all sorts of things that they weren't maybe expecting to this year. But at the heart of it for me was being able to explore relationships. I think a little bit like RK, I wanted just like a smaller, tighter story that explored a relationship between a father and a daughter. And whether or not I succeeded at that, it was really fun to play and explore that. I have a young girl at home, and one of the things I often think about is how I'm going to act as a father when she gets older and exerts more of her own will, probably in ways that I will not necessarily approve of. And that was a lot of the motivation for writing the story, was a chance to explore it a decade or so before I have to worry about it.
Get a shot on that while you can. I like that. No, that's really, it's like what we were talking about earlier with the idea that like, it does, like, fantasy doesn't have to be like very high stakes to be meaningful. Sometimes a lot of the more intimate stories can really like pack a punch and everything.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting to attempt to write a shorter story that stayed focused. And again, whether or not it succeeds is up to the reader. But it was very fun and very cathartic to be able to make that attempt.
Yeah, it's that's really cool. I like that a lot. Josiah, did you want to go?
Sure. So I write heroic epic fantasy. And so when you write that, you kind of want a lot of adventure, a lot of action typically, right? But what I also wanted to bring to it, and I think this arose from the environment, the world that I decided to build in. I built on a colonial frontier. So with that came a sort of indigenous peoples, right? And in pretty much every colonial situation I've ever read or heard about, there is exploitation, there is violence, there is a lot of heavy stuff that happens, right? You know, like, so I needed to include those themes in the book, right? And I guess I decided to make the protagonist racist to make it the most poignant way to do that, because the change that I wanted to see was the racism and the colonial attitudes overcome. I had to do that through the main character. So a really heavy topic, but what people have mostly said is that it's like a heavy topic treated lightly, or it's not like you don't feel like it's dwelled on over much. So I think, yeah, so hopefully it makes it feel like not just another adventure. It's also you're exploring deep and important themes.
Yeah, and it also seems very fitting for like the time period you seem to be sort of drawing inspiration from. And that seems like a very sort of honest way of grappling with that sort of thing. That seems like a really cool way of approaching that subject matter.
I mean, one of the things that I really like about your story, Josiah, is the role that like the lies she experienced in her childhood, how they shaped her, and how like repeated encounters with the truth really forced her to confront beliefs that she's held as a child. And I thought that was masterfully done. So I was very impressed.
Thanks.
That's incredible. Did I get everyone?
There was a and bit then of conveniently miss out yourself.
I think Ed has to go again, right? Elias up
there. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit. Oh, yeah, rejoice.
An answer from you this time?
Shall I go again? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, shall I just also subvert Josiah's answer as well? Fuck, it's this way. Josiah's answer in that, like, my character is the total asshole. Like, she starts off, seems somewhat nice, and then by the end of the book, she's like a rampaging, slaving, pillaging monstrosity of a person. So yeah, sort of. All I do is just take what these guys write and then change it up, republish it, like human AI.
No. Oh, I have to do my. Oh, I forgot I had to answer the question too. Oh man, I think a lot of the things that make my own stuff unique. I think I talked about this a couple of days ago. I feel like I make a lot of weird connections, or it's even like on a word by word basis and on just idea to idea. And when I went to write The Falls All There Is, it started out a lot more like a normal post-apocalyptic thing. And the more I wrote it, the more I was just sort of like, I need to sort of change this up just to make, I started with the cyber courses, and then I just needed to make that make sense, because I didn't have an explanation for why that would exist. And I think a lot of it is just sort of trying to import a variety of influences. And sort of a bit mixed in the idea that I think a lot of my books end up very deeply internal, where you spend like a lot of many pages just with Peter in his own head trying to figure out what's going on, and so I tried to write stuff that sort of plays with like how someone gets from point A to point B with a thought process that is not necessarily the most easily understood, and I try to sort of weave that sort of thought process through on a micro and sort of more macro level. I want to see if does anyone have anything else they sort of want to add about on this topic of sort of uniqueness before we move on to another question?
I guess I can go. So kind of like what RK was saying of you know, cozy so often kind of gets overlooked as in terms of nothing's really happening. It's just like you feel good and there's low stakes and that's kind of it. So with Hills of Heather and Bone, I was kind of like, I wanted to do cozy, but I also wanted to do some heavier themes, like the exploration of grief and what do you do when you are forced into, you know, circumstances that are not your own choosing, and dealing with mental health issues. So just how to kind of balance those out, where we have so sort of the cozy, quieter moments, but still there's, you know, bad things that happen, there's sad things that happen. So really wanted to kind of mix in the bittersweet without it be maybe too soft and too dark, because my other books are usually darker fantasy. So this was more of like, okay, let's try cozy. And it's like, well, it's not 100% cozy. It's more cozy-ish dark cozy. I don't know. so which I really love, like just that kind of balance between like, how can something that is maybe painful also kind of be redeemed into something that's a little more comforting. Yeah. So I kind of wanted to play around with that a little bit of, you know, you can still, things can still suck, but there's still like some sort of hope in that. So that's what I really wanted to go for with this book.
Yeah, I really like that. That's a thing I think I've noticed in a lot of the books in this contest is there's this sort of idea where there's a lot of things that are, don't strictly have one foot in like a specific camp. They're sort of straddling a few lines. And I really like the way that that's sort of been able to cross over throughout a lot of the entries in here. Jacqueline, do you want to go?
Yeah, I was kind of trying to hide and not say anything.
You got called out.
So I've lost track. In all honesty, the panels are shuffled around, and I was planning on being able to go in order, and now I'm just like, ah, fuck, who's spoken? I'm so sorry. I tried to move on with that.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, this is a really difficult question to answer because, of course, we all bring unique things to the table. The writing itself is a way that we process how we see the world and how we feel about things and how we deal with our demons and a bunch of things, and that's going to be individual from person to person. And I think as long as a writer is honest, it's going to come over well. And for me personally, I didn't even know there was a cozy fantasy was a thing until I joined Spiffbo. I had never heard that term before, never. And it's being applied to my book, and which is a surprise to me. But really what I did was I came up with the seeds of the foundation of a story, and I decided I wanted to put in all my favorite things about stories, which involved a lot of mystery and atmosphere and intrigue and deep character study, and just kind of put them in a blender and see what comes out. After many long years of working on it, it's a very, very big blender. But I guess that's what I did. And not a very interesting answer, which is why I was trying to hide.
You know, I kind of went to what you were saying there at the beginning. Neil Gaiman has always kind of said that when a writer tells the truth, the readers will follow. You're pouring a part of yourself onto the page, and that's what draws people into the story. So.
Right.
I think you hit on something important there.
Yeah, there's a good quote I remember him saying where it's like, if the moment you feel like you're exposing a bit too much of yourself is when you're starting to get it right.
Yep.
Yeah. How long did you work on it? I'm curious.
What's that?
Oh, I was asking how long you were working on the book. You mentioned you worked on it a long time.
Yeah. Well, I actually had four books written before I even decided to look at indie publishing. I had just been writing for my own pleasure and my own, you know, fun time, you know, off hours hobby. So I actually started at the Wickwire Watch in 2009.
Oh,
so
wow.
I worked on it for 13 years, just various iterations and drafts and having different people read it. So it went through the grinder multiple times before it got on the market. Yeah.
That's incredible. I like that a lot. I always love when someone's able to work on like one thing for like a long time, because I'm that is completely different from the way that I tend to approach things, where it's like I will lose interest so quickly. So the amount of stamina that's necessary to keep that up for such a long time is always the most impressive thing to me.
Yeah, I had to bounce onto other projects and then come back to it, but I always came back to it.
That's cool.
Leave me alone. I like
that a lot. Did I forget anyone else before we move to a different thing?
All right.
I think the next question is a bit similar. I might just sort of open this up if anyone wants to do a bit of a back and forth, because the next one is more just a writing advice question, specifically just to like either aspiring writers or someone who's like been around for a bit and wants to get into whatever niche you feel like you might belong to.
I realized that when I was looking at my notes, I was looking at the advice one, and I was like, yeah, I'll just go with that. And then I answered the wrong question last time. It's fine, because I did not have a good answer for the last one. But related to cozy fantasy, kind of going off what Katie was saying about how there's like a range as to like what is cozy, it's kind of fascinating being on like the cozy fantasy subreddits and seeing people arguing about what is cozy, what isn't cozy, what exactly are the parameters, and there really aren't any solid parameters, I would say, in terms of like, you know, I think there's sometimes a line, like a boundary when it comes to spice, but sometimes there isn't. And sometimes there's a boundary when it comes to violence. But then if you look at the first Emily Wilde book, there's like a scene of pretty graphic violence in there, but that's still overall considered a cozy book. And so I guess I would also recommend to people writing cozy fantasy is that like, you can take advantage of that leeway, I think, and you can kind of stretch the bounds of what is considered cozy or not, and just like wouldn't worry about it too much because it is so purposefully vague and subjective.
Yeah, I like that. That speaks to sort of what Josiah was saying with like the comparison to Orconomics, with like the idea that for some people, cozy fantasy is something where it's like very low stakes and there's not a lot of sort of like threatening stuff sort of happens, but then for other people it's just like anything that's sort of like sufficiently low stakes, just cap it there. I like the idea of the vagueness being able to is something you can sort of play around in and push the bounds of. That's really cool.
Going off of the cozy fantasy, it's also feels kind of like a spectrum, I guess, like most things in life, right? So like J.A. Andrews, I feel like when I read her books, it's epic fantasy, but it has a cozy feel to it, you know? You kind of feel like everything's going to be all right. So, like, there's, you know, there's all kinds of straddling boundaries. And I mean, just kind of like what you were saying.
Yeah, I like that. Does anyone else have any sort of, want to jump in with any sort of advice, either for their niche or in general?
I guess I can. So for me, like the best kind of writing advice I'd ever gotten, and at least what applies to me, is just like taking time with your writing. Like kind of what Jacqueline said, sometimes your books take a lot longer and, you know, it can be hard when people are like, well, I've got, you know, my whole trilogy out in like 18 months. I'm like, cool. I wrote two sentences in that time. Some of us are slow writers, or, you know, sometimes, I mean, I tend to spend a lot of time like doing the mental like outline in my head and working through all the scenes, which is why it takes longer. Because my first book took about 10 years to actually write and get to a place that was publishable. But Hills of Heather and Bone only took like a year. So I was like, I don't know if that'll happen again. But really just like giving your book like the best amount of time it needs. And there's really no like definition of when that will be. So I like to kind of like compare it to like a bottle of wine. Certain wines take a little bit longer to get like that different kind of flavor. So if it needs to sit for a little bit, you know, that's good. So you can come back to it instead of, I have to get this out because people need it to be out. Really, as indie authors, we have that freedom of, you can set your own deadlines. And if that deadline doesn't work out, then you can keep pushing it if that's what the story needs. Obviously, sometimes you maybe need to put a little bit of a fire under it, but you know, take your time with your story.
I like that. I remember seeing a quote a while back. I forget who said it, but there was someone saying that there's in some respects, not necessarily an upper limit on the amount you can improve something in a sort of creative process. And the idea is sort of being like, well, you gotta know when you can do better, but also when to let it go and everything. That's fun sort of thing to play around in.
Yeah. I think the encapsulated form of that is always perfect as the enemy of good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's, I'm trying to, does anyone else have something they want to jump in with?
So mine wouldn't really be advice in my niche, so to speak. This is just sort of kind of going out there to anybody who, like, maybe you have a story in your head and you haven't taken the time or allowed yourself to sit down and write that out. This is something I struggle with a lot, and I've probably shared it before. But I just wanted to say, like, don't undervalue the practice of writing, and like, don't worry about a fact that maybe your writing isn't paying the bills right now, and don't consider that to be like a selfish use of your time, because your writing has value even if you never sell a single copy, because it's your expression of your thoughts and your feelings, your emotions, your perspectives, and what you've experienced in your life that nobody else can write that exact same thing. And so I just kind of want to encourage anybody who's like fiddling around with writing or thinking, oh, I'm not going to take the time, and this is just a me thing, I need to focus on other stuff. Like, just kind of redefine. I think for me, it was redefining my perception of what success was, and giving myself permission to create without the guilt and second guessing that kind of plagues us and other creative types. So just a little like, go for it message to anybody who's thinking about writing a book.
I feel like jumping off of that too, one of the themes that's come up, I know, in a lot of our conversations is that reviews for the same book, you know, fortunately we are all finalists, and so we get to enjoy a wide variety of reviews on our works. And one of the things that I think a lot of us are learning is that what works for one reader may not work for another, even in the same story. And to me, that seems like evidence that not only should you write, but you should really focus on writing the story that you want to write, because you will never make all readers happy. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes, particularly in the independent space, there is a lot of focus on the commercialization of fiction. And that is all well and good as well, but I think the world needs individual personal stories that really resonate with readers. And so that's one of the reasons why I think this crew is pretty awesome. Welcome back, Ed.
Yay. Hopefully this works. I had to switch to a whole different computer, so pardon my flatmate wandering around in the background and stuff. So.
It's good to have you back.
What did I miss? Do you want to repeat that?
You did say the world ended at like 4 a.m. So
I wasn't lying.
Yeah.
Oh man, they got him.
No, Ryan, I feel like that's Ed, we were talking about like advice for writers, and we're kind of talking bit about writing your own personal stories without worrying too much about commercialism. And
that's,
I feel like that's
my life. I just went,
I feel like it's so difficult, particularly with like, if you join like author groups that are really focused on, you know, really intense release schedules, like every 3 months, every 6 months. And they're focusing on tropes, and they're focusing on how to go viral on TikTok. It makes it really, really difficult to remember kind of the art reason that you got into it and be like, oh yeah, no, actually I just want to write this story. And I know that I'll find readers who resonate with it, even if it doesn't have 10 of the most popular tropes and doesn't go viral on.
Yeah. Like I would say if I were to look at it that way, like you're trying to write to people say write to your market, write to your audience and all that sort of stuff. That to me, I mean, yeah, you're probably going to make more money, but that to me is what you do if you wanted to do traditional publishing, right? Like that's sort of the traditional publishing model, is to write to a market to try and sell it and stuff. So for me, it would feel as though I was turning indie authorship into traditional publishing anyway, which was like, that's the whole reason I do this as opposed to that, is that it gives me that freedom. So if I then chuck that all away in order to chase the dollar, I may as well have just gone and got, actually, I may as well just go get a real job, but you know, but yeah, I would agree there that you don't want to like, you know, focus on the wrong things and stuff.
The other thing I notice with that sort of headspace is like, I've seen a couple times with people, there are people like, if you're really focused on hitting those goals, it can be difficult to like connect with other authors, even like the biggest thing I think that a lot of authors have, especially indie authors, is like is community and being able to like engage with other authors, because those are the people who are going to boost you and be able to help you out, like, and even just like they're going to be the ones that you're venting to when you're like, I can't figure this fucking scene out, god damn it. And it's like if you have like part of you that's going to be really it's going to be really worried or like comparing yourself to someone else, it's going to get in the way of your ability to engage with other people and their work, and it's you're even going to have a tough time sort of pulling something from like other people where it's like, oh, I see what this technique they're using, let me see how I can apply this to like my own story, whatever I'm doing. And I think that can be a very sort of freaky place to be in. So I think a really good sort of way of engaging with it is almost like a sort of, it takes a village kind of mindset.
Oh, for sure. You've got to remember that it is your story, though. I think that's the thing a lot of people forget.
Oh, yeah.
They want to take what other people do that's just successful. And it's like, but then if you don't inject your own thing into it, then you may as well just read their stuff. But yeah, so if you take people's good advice and people's cool stuff that they do and improve from them, but like, you know, make it your own, I think that's where you're going to get like, well, I mean, that's where like genres come from, right? Like people would say a book is cozy or whatever, but that's just because there's a certain number of books that happen to have similarities. But amongst all those similar books, there's going to be like wildly different things happening in them and a different voice and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah.
Like be yourself, but be part of the team.
Yeah. It's, you got to find a balance with that. It's another reason you can't really, you got to be careful about comparing, because it's like that's also going to be difficult, going to make it difficult to engage with any sort of feedback you get, where it's like, am I doing this? Am I taking this criticism because it's like, what's going to help me to make this the best story I can tell? Or is this like because it's an author I really admire who I wish I could like sell as well or whatever, or like I wish I could tell a story as well as they could or something? Like, it's, you got to be careful in terms of comparison because you don't want like that to sort of mess with your judgment.
Was this all advice to anyone as well, like not just other writers and stuff? Was that the original question? Because I missed the actual question and I'm just winging that.
I mean, you know, the question was like specific, like advice to either emerging writers or ones that are specifically in your niche. So it's very open.
Because another thing that I would say that's sort of on your point there is just to when you do compare yourself to people, I mean, everyone does it, right? Like we're going to compare ourselves constantly. Oh, yeah. Like that's the whole basis of this competition. Like people are comparing books or reading them and judging them. And some people are going to do that, right? But the other thing to remember is that if you're new or new to something, you compare yourself to people who are established or people who've been doing it a lot longer than you have. So it's like, you don't want to be looking at what you're doing and going, oh, shit, I'm not selling X number of books, or I'm not like getting this many accolades or this many people noticing what I do. But it's like, you know, you're new. They've been around for however long, or they may be in a social situation or a financial situation. I saw a chat, one of the these chats a little while, and Andy Pelican was saying that that the investment in a book was roughly like 10K or something.
It was yesterday.
That's 30 grand New Zealand, right? Like I don't have 30 grand to chuck in a book, man. Holy shit.
No. Good God.
My car's not even 30 grand. Like I don't think I own anything that's 30 grand. So it's like in order to do that, you've got to compare, you're comparing yourselves to people who are not only in like a different temporal space than you, because they started sooner than you did, but you're also comparing yourself to people in different financial, socioeconomic situations too. So it's like one of those things that I'd say to everybody is like, you can compare the writing, you can compare the craft, but you should never compare the person behind that and the situation they're in, because you're always going to feel like inadequate or you know, you're not the same. But that's fine because you're not the same person. So
yeah. Yeah, I like that.
That's my advice. Mm-hmm. It's my dad talk of the day.
It's really good.
Yeah. Does anyone else have anything they want to add to this topic? Should we go to the Smith book question?
How did you decide which one to enter into the competition? How many would you have left to take books? For me, it's pretty easy. I ran out of books to enter, so this is the only one I had available.
That is an excellent one, too. Yeah, I had
I
one.
Only have one.
I had the one that I entered in year 7, and then I only had the one in year 9, so it was a pretty easy sort of formulation for me.
Yeah, I think one of the rules about SPFBO is that it has to be either a first in series or a standalone. And so, like, I know for me, even though I have several books published, only having so many series starters or standalones makes it a fairly easy choice. But yeah, for me, I was just most proud of Last Fang of God last year, and so that was the one that I decided to submit. Yeah, between that and another story, and I decided that I liked Last Fang better. So,
what did you like better about it?
It was more personal to me. As I talked about, it was, you know, me wrestling with my own future fears of parenthood. Yeah. And it was a story that came together much more cleanly than most of mine do. And I felt good about it. So I decided to submit that one.
That's really cool. I like that a lot. But I know you have a couple books. What about why did you pick Cold West?
The other one I considered was Blackthorn, and it's a fantasy, but it leans harder into sci-fi and more contemporary stuff. So I decided to kind of nix that and picked Cold West this year. I wasn't confident enough in Blackthorn for it to really make the rounds. So
that makes sense. Yeah. Did anyone else have multiple books that they sort of had to size up? All right. Best advice for anyone entering SPIFFO in the future.
Stay up
late. Get up early. Be fast.
I was going to say, log in right on time.
It's all pressing into it.
Box. I think it's going to be 15 minutes tops.
Yeah.
I was going to say 10, honestly.
They'll start having to do like pre-orders.
Oh, man. I have to get like golden tickets really long.
Yeah. Lottery.
What time was it for everybody when you entered?
It was 5 a.m. for me. I almost
I was going to say
it was midnight.
It was really early in the morning for me.
Oh my god. Oh, I thought I had it bad. Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, that was like
you go to sleep?
It was afternoon. I don't remember.
Well, I was so nervous beforehand I couldn't sleep anyway, so I just went to sleep after.
That's smart. That's honestly.
Yeah. I just didn't think it was going to fill up as fast, but I had all my stuff and I was like, it's fine. And like 40 minutes later, like, oh, it's closed. I'm like, oh, it took 3 hours last year.
I
so fast.
I thought it was going to take an hour this year because I noticed each year it gets a little bit quicker. And then when it was like even less than that, I was like, God damn, this contest is getting some traction. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to like add bloggers next year to be able to accept a wider count of books.
That'd be cool.
Oh, that's so much.
But then that's a lot. Like if you have, well, then I guess you'd still have to get it down to, I'm not sure how it'd work with finalists. You don't necessarily want like 20 finalists because that's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just glad I'm not in charge of next year. It's gonna be
I get to watch next year. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the other piece of advice I would give to anyone entering in the future, engage with the other people who are in there, who are entering, because it's like it's really stressful. It's everyone is chewing on their spleens. Everyone's slowly like going insane, waiting for updates, and it's just a very like. It's very stressful, but it's a lot more bearable when you have other people to complain with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
it's like, long. Oh God, when are they going to update?
It's a long time to stress out and wait in between everything that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make sure you have other shit to do because it will consume you for a bit as well. Like I've noticed, like I've started writing in a whole other world and genre and all that sort of stuff series, just because it's like, if I write anything to do with Daughter of the Beast, I like look at what's happening to it in this competition and I'm like, I don't want this to affect my vision. I'm
gonna
it's more just like I'm like, fuck, I probably should go back and fix that shit now instead.
Oh, yeah,
that's why I'm not looking at any of the reviews or the numbers because I'm writing the sequel right now and I'm like, I'm not gonna jinx myself that way.
That I guess would also be my advice, is if you do enter and you make it in, like, kind of decide in your own way how much you're going to invest in like reading everything and being there for everything that comes up, because it can really affect the way that, especially like if you work on a sequel like some of us are, it can be mentally challenging.
I thought it was better just to engage with the community and then just kind of forget about the other part of the competition. Mm-hmm. Right. until your name comes up. It's like, oh no.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
like, because with my group, it was like towards the end, I was like, okay, we're still here and nothing's been announced. So I can't just forget as easily.
I don't know if that's harder, right? Like, whether it's harder to be picked earlier and then have to sit there and wait, or whether it's harder to like know that, because who was it that was like picked and then the very next day it was like semifinalist, finalist?
That happened to me.
Yeah.
I did have a moment earlier in the contest where I was picked by Becky M, who was updating pretty weekly, and then she and she was going completely in order, so you knew when you were on deck, and then she missed the week where I was expecting her to update, and whole week I was just like, I am good for, like, I am laying in bed and playing fucking Skyrim. I am doing nothing else. I'm not engaging with the world. I am literally just going to go insane because I have no idea what's in store for me. And then I got the review and it was gushing, and I remember, and it almost made it. I adored the review, but I remember specifically a moment where it's like, okay, this seems like a finalist level review, but I can't put stock in that because I don't want to be like, but I was so sure. And it was like a very, very difficult headspace to be in, where I didn't know how much stock to put in the strength of the review, because I didn't want to get my hopes up only to have them horribly, horribly dashed if another book came along and she liked that one better. So I know for me, that was very, very tough.
That was kind of, it was hard for mine. Oh, sorry, Jackie, you can go.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to say, Spiffboat, it has been really stressful, like, all the way through. I feel like, at least for me personally, there's been not really been a point where I've been like, okay, I'm safe. Because as soon as I was picked as a finalist, immediately I had survivor's guilt. Because all of these amazing, talented writers, and I felt like, what? It just felt really unfair, and so then I was dealing with that, and I was reaching out to a couple of people like, do I really deserve this? Do I really belong here? This should not have happened. And it was just the whole way through. And phase two is weird beast.
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, it's definitely way less sexy than phase one.
Because you can't super be like it's a bad look to be like, this is very stressful, because like you're in a position where like you're getting you have a lot of visibility and traction. And so it's like, you don't want to be like that gif of the dude who's like wiping a tear away with like $100 bills or whatever.
The finalist coin.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to have that energy, but you're so visible, and it's like, it's so freaky if you're not prepared for it.
Very much. Yeah, because with like Fantasy Faction, like some of our judges had been posting like their reviews fairly early, but we had multiple ones. So I was like, okay, this one judge posted a good review. So I'm like, well, at least I got that. So maybe, I don't know. And then so it was like October 29th is when they're like, oh, we're getting closer to semifinalists. And then I was like, oh, I made semifinalists. Awesome. They have to decide like tomorrow who's a finalist. And I can't tell because we had a lot of good people in our batch. And then I was having surgery on the 30th, and then I woke up and everyone's like, congrats on making finalists. I'm like, what? What's happening?
Am I dreaming?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, did I already go under anesthesia? Is this what's happening?
I could just imagine you groggy when you come out and you're like halfway through the semi-finalist review and you get the finalist one cover.
So it was Whiplash.
I must not have made it.
I uploaded my graphic, and then like the next day I was like, well, now I need a new graphic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was a weird feeling, and it really didn't like sink in until much later, because it was like towards the end. So I'm like, I don't know what to expect anymore. This is the second year that that's happened, where I've been in a batch where it's taken a while. So it's just like that mixture of, please put me out of my misery just so I know where I stand, so I can cry and then move on. Or, you know, what do we expect? So it's just weird. And now it's like we're at the lunch table and everyone else has left the cafeteria and we're just here.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's fun.
Yeah. It's like we're here at the special table, but we're waiting to be called back to the principal's office.
Yes.
Yeah, it does feel like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
feels like we're war heroes on the way back to get shot as traitors or something. Oh, no. by the time we get back home, they've had a revolution.
Another question for the finalists is, which book were you thinking would be a finalist from your group when the groups were announced?
Definitely not mine.
Yes.
Yeah. Not mine.
Not mine.
I didn't really keep, like, tabs on all of them. I knew that if I was, like, obsessively following the blogger that did mine, like, it would just be Bad News Bears. And so I like set it and forget it as much as possible. But yeah, I remember well, I remember getting like some kind of Facebook or Instagram message being like, oh, congrats on being a semifinalist. And I was like, okay. And then a couple days later, I was like, oh, congrats on being a finalist. And I was like, no, someone already told me I was just a semifinalist. Then that was it. How much I've been paying attention to the whole thing. So I'm not the best one to answer that question, even though I just did.
Great. That was a great answer. Honest. I admire your sort of like fortitude in sort of just like knuckling down through this and just not engaging a lot with the sort of review side of things, because I do not have that kind of stamina. And it's genuinely just like really impressive to see like your ability to just sort of turn that side of it off.
I think I have to, or I would go next.
Yeah.
I think for me and a lot of people in Cassidy's group, we were super nervous because Rob J. Hayes was in that group and like a powerhouse, like somebody we look up to. And so I was like, well, I don't have a chance. So I wasn't really like paying attention.
Oh, man.
Yes. Well, that's kind of how it went. Well, mine, like Salt in the Wound was in that one and The Ocean of Others. And I'd heard like so many good things about that. And there were other books in that grouping. I was like, okay, I think those are going to make semifinalists and those have a good chance of being finalists. I was like, I'm just hoping maybe to get a decent review and do that with dignity. But yeah, there were people I was like, I'm glad I'm not in that grouping because that's way more stressful. And Rob J. Hayes, and then Kian with the 11th Cycle. I was like, I read that book. I'm like, oop. No.
There are just so many good books. Yeah, so many good quality entries.
I think I thought Book of Zog or Tool would be the two finalists. I remember Sewell, I remember being really sort of
That was so pretty.
Yeah, even just seeing the cover, like I was like, I remember just seeing the cover and being like, oh, well, this is clearly going to be, I haven't even opened the book yet, obviously. And then I opened the book and I was like, oh, I'm fucked. There's no way. There's no way. Wow. We know who it's going to be. And it's just sort of, oh God, no, it was, those were the two I remember. I did a thing, when I joined, I was the opposite where I was like, I'm going to check out at least like the first few pages of everything. I watched every other SwiftBo video that Becky had put out as soon as I knew that that was the group I was in. And it was just sort of like, I would go back and forth between being like, oh, I'm fine, I can handle this. And like, I have to size up all of my chances. Here's my mathematical formula for how it's going to go.
The problem with that though, is there's no way to sabotage it. Like, you know, usually you want it, like if it was a sports game, you could like, I don't know, give the other team dysentery or something, but
especially from New Zealand. Oregon Trail, dysentery time.
You know, what are you going to do from all the way over here and stuff? And it's like, it's too late. It's already out there. There's nothing you can do. And the worst thing though, I find is that like, you send the book off and it's getting judged and then you're like, oh, fuck, you read along yourself to see what they were talking about. It's like completely full of typos and garbage and, yeah, so I feel like with this, it's like, I didn't think I was going to win. I thought in my batch, was it Price of Power was in mine? Yeah, I was like, no, that's definitely. But then I think with, as it was Bookborn, I think she was reading Game of Thrones at the time, so she was completely burned out on epic fantasy, like, you know, Power Struggle fantasy. And so I got the Miss Congeniality prize. And I kind of looked my way into the finals.
Bye, Clayton.
Yeah, in mine, I'm afraid to answer this question because I have a terrible memory often, but I think it was Death's Disciple that I kind of had my eye on. And if I remember correctly, we were within like 0.25 points for who was the finalist. It was like so close. So I have very specific survivor skills on that.
With mine in my semifinal, when Dom had picked to steal the sun as the better of the two, like I watched this video and he did like a countdown and he got to me and I was like second from the thing and I was like, oh thank god, like I can stop thinking about this fucking competition. And then he was like, well actually I wanted to put that one forward. I was like, oh for fuck's sake, no. I was relieved, but at the same time I was like, oh. And then I felt, yeah, it was just like this massive survivor skill because it was like this actual admission that that book's way better than mine. So by the way, everybody, if you're watching this, go read that instead.
Oh man,
I think the funny juxtaposition of emotions in being in the contest, we keep using the term survivor skill, is like you want to win, but you find yourself like cheering for everybody as you go along. And it's like you're happy that we're all out there and getting our books looked at and getting attention. And like as much as you want yourself to win, you're also happy when somebody else finds success too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the hard part about knowing like more of the authors now is just like, oh man, I've read your book. I like you as a person, but I also kind of want to win. It was really hard last year when I was up for semifinalist with Chiago. And it was just like, well, I like your book and I like you, but you know, so it's like that happy, sad mixture of like, I want to win, but I'm also happy if you win. So which is, I think, unique to this competition because, like, you interact more with people, or at least this is the only competition I've been in where it's like, there's people.
I remember previous years. I regret a lot of the things I said to people who ended up becoming finalists, specifically the finalist in SWPO 7 from my batch. It was Burn Red Skies by Kirsten Espinosa Rosero. And I remember a couple of times just mentioning that we were in the same batch and she would just be like, I'm sorry. And I would just mention it just to be an asshole. And now I'm like, oh no, I didn't know how bad that was affecting you. And I think, the other one was, I remember when Crystal Matar was announced as a semifinalist and I was like, well, of course you're going to make finals, obviously. And then I was announced as a semifinalist and I got a DM from Crystal like, of course you're gonna make finals, obviously. And I was just like, well, okay, no, yeah, I'm an asshole. I'm the worst. Oh god. It was bad. The next question is what drove you to enter SWPO?
Validation.
it's a free competition.
Yeah. It was free and I'm super cheap.
Yeah. it's a good opportunity to like meet other people, especially if like you're new and don't know a lot of other people like in the general space. It's a good, like, it gives everyone something to talk about. And then it's a very easy way to find people you click with, I think. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it the other thing that the other reason I sort of joined?
Yeah. For free me, publicity. I was like, good. Yeah. Oh, sorry. That's all I wanted to say. You're good. Free publicity.
Yeah. For me, I was like a really super brand new, like, I had just published my book like the month before and have nothing else before that. It was like I needed a way to, you know, connect with other authors and just sort of, enter the community. And so it was a neat way to kind of a gateway to get into the community and have something to talk about with people.
Yeah,
I think community is really one of the big reasons, right? Mm-hmm. Because no matter what, you're part of 300 authors who are also up early in the morning for 15 minutes to submit. But it really is. It's a tight-knit community. You see that through all the stages. And I feel like this is the third or fourth SPIFBO that I've been a part of. And like every year it gets bigger and more interesting. And so like this year you see a lot of people doing the read all 300 first chapters sort of things.
Oh, wow.
And so you just get a lot, you meet a lot of interesting people, you get a lot more publicity, but you can make new friends. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really cool.
And even if you don't make it, oh, sorry. Go, Jacqueline. We'll just hold up a sign. Do you go next or who goes next?
Pass a little baton around.
I was just going to say I joined SPIFBO just because I wanted something to make my acid reflux worse.
Oh, no.
Don't we all?
Oh, man.
No, I was going to say, yeah, just the community aspect. And even if your book doesn't, you know, make it very far, like there's still, you know, 299 other people in that group who are like, maybe I'll check that out. Or even beyond that, people who are like, hey, that sounds very interesting. And especially with the first reads that have been going on. I don't remember it as much last year, but I was also very new to the competition and the indie scene. So I was like, I don't know what's happening. But the amount of people who are doing that just to kind of shed light on other books that maybe didn't make it past the first round, I think is really encouraging. Plus just the fact that the Discord keeps getting bigger each year. Yeah. I'm just like, it's just everyone's still there from the first year to now. And it's just, it's a very interesting community. But yeah, the live streams that people do in the early morning sign up hours that I think Andrew did last year. I don't remember that the previous year. But again, I don't know. Yeah. So I like that aspect.
There's been a lot of newer stuff this year, at least if it was happening in previous years, I don't remember seeing it. There's like a lot of like panels and sort of podcasting that people will do, especially in phase one that I remember. Like even if you don't make it to like even semifinals or something, like there's still a lot of ways you can raise the profile of your book by just like connecting with other people. And like there were a couple of times where someone DM'd me and like, we're putting together a Swiftbo panel. Like, you want to talk about how stressful it is? It's like, yeah, I sure do. I love complaining.
Yeah. And I always think of like Ryan Cahill. He got cut very early and look at him now. Yeah. So getting cut does not mean no success.
Yeah. Some of my favorite books got cut. Like it's genuinely like, you can be really talented. And it's just, a lot of it comes down to luck. And like, if you place with the right judge, you could have like a really, really good like romantic fantasy. But if you land with a judge that doesn't like romance, it's not going to make it very far. And it's sort of what sort of luck of the draw situation.
Yeah, there's a total lottery. But what are we going to like find out at the end of this particular round that this was like the jokes before where they put through the you cut Ryan Cahill and you guys go on.
Oh man, April 1st, we're going to find out the whole thing was just a prank.
Yeah, when did it open, actually?
The coins are going to explode into dust.
Oh, man.
So I have a follow-up question for all of you. Do you intend on joining Spiffbo again in the future?
I really wanted to do Spiffbox because it's called Spiffbox. Yeah, but I won't have anything ready for that. But maybe in the future. So if you win, right, and you go back and rejoin, you either will do a victory lap and style on all the noobs, or will crash and burn and feel like a total fake from the first time.
And then the first one doesn't even
work. It's probably best to just bow out at this point. Rest on my laurels.
High stakes.
That's only going to be a problem when you win, Ed.
It comes down to money. Why do you think I'm so poor now? All my money's gone to the judges.
Oh, man. I'm just trying to enjoy it this time around because I've kind of locked myself into a trilogy that I need to finish. It's going to be a long time before I can join one again. So
I've got two more books and the next one isn't going to be out until like 2025. So it might be a couple more years even.
But you would do it again down the road, not necessarily next year.
I might.
If you can get in.
It depends on how this year goes. Okay.
I would want to just hang out in the SPFBO Discord just to like offer, like I want to be that weird old dude hanging out in a cave offering advice. And it's weird sagely stuff that doesn't quite make sense, which is pretty much how I talk anyway, but like just have these like authors come in, what was it like back in your day last year?
When you become a finalist, here's what you're going to do.
My day, it was open for hours.
Yeah, unfortunately my advice is always just wing it anyway, like so it doesn't really work, but I want to do that.
Hi, Morgan.
Hey, it's Morgan.
Yay.
So unfortunately, Morgan is in fact actually that dog. That is actually
a very talented dog.
I struggled to get the camera working today. So
there was a tragic transporter accident.
Dog. Yeah.
Oh man. Oh God, we need a mascot.
You in Muppet form. Yeah. So,
I would make a phenomenal
just
Muppet.
Just a mesh shirt. It's great.
Oh, man. Do you guys all know the Frogicorn?
Not familiar.
I wish I had a way to put it up on the screen. It's like it's from a larger comic, a web comic about how accepting compliments is very difficult.
Aw, me.
And it's like, hey, I made you this frog unicorn thing. And then it's like, actually, and someone, I think it's like someone compliments it. And it's like, no, don't worry. You don't have to say that about me. In fact, I'll destroy it. I'll destroy it for us, and lights it on fire. And there's a specific like little image of this frog unicorn, and the little pupils are just melting and becoming tears down its cheeks and everything. And it's, and it became the mascot for Spiffbo 7. Everyone, all the finalists changed their profiles, little profile pictures on Twitter to the froggy corn. And then I think anytime a review dropped or something, they would just post the the picture of it.
There's so much.
Can someone dig up that GIF? Because I want it now.
I can send it to you on Discord.
We can see the Muppet version of that. So it's the year of Muppets. The year of Muppets.
I do need somebody to draw the Muppet version of Connor, though. Oh, thank you.
We have to at least have Connor's face on it, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, obviously, yes. Yeah, I would make a great Muppet, honestly. I think I have the right sort of mythical
plot presence. Twist. Connor is a Muppet. We just didn't know.
The real Connor's sitting down in the desk.
Oh God. We need a frog coin. I feel like we can't find the mascot like in advance. It needs to like flow naturally from whatever we sort of.
You don't pick the mascot. The mascot picks you.
Yes, exactly. The one chooses the wizard. All right. The last question is: what's next for everyone?
Like today, or? like 11 in the morning. Yeah, I was going to go have some lunch.
I thought it was like, what's next publishing wise? No.
Yeah, I think that is what the
end. I haven't thought that far yet.
Hey, dinner's next for me.
There we go.
It's
causing trouble.
I'm just going to jump in with this. I'm writing basically Redwall to redeem rats, and it's pirates.
I'm very excited about that.
And I also want to fix the shitty plot holes in Pirates of the Caribbean, so I'm going to steal all their shit and then put it into
this is great.
My own book. Yeah, and then it will be rats as the good guys. And that's
always the best reason to write a book, honestly.
Yeah. I just want to, like, I got really mad about, I think I posted on Twitter about the fact that they killed off, spoilers, guys, no, who cares? It's like 15 years old, but they kill off James Norrington. He's like the best character from the first movie. And it's actually the second or third or whatever. It's sort of bullshit. So, I just want to take that and then do it right. And so, yeah, that's what I've done. It's got nothing to do with Daughter of the Beast or anything. Like,
all right. Josiah, what's next for you?
Yeah, still working on the third book for Last Rangers series. It's in Kickstarter right now, so then I'll publish it. Backers will get it in March, and then I'll publish it in April. So, yeah, that's what's going on for me.
All right.
I'm working on the sequel to Master the Void, which is going to be just as thick, so.
You have a title for it yet?
Yeah, Creature of the Void is the title.
Ooh, I like that.
So sad.
Katie, what's next for you?
So I'm still working on my book two in my others trilogy, the Grinning Assassins trilogy. So book two, finishing up like major revisions for it. It's just taking a little bit longer than I thought it would. So hopefully going to get that out by the end of the year. And then I'm also kind of working on a fantasy Western novella that I've also had kind of on the back burner for a couple years. I wanted to finish it for NaNoWriMo and then just was a couple scenes short of finishing it. So need to go back, do that, see if it's consumable for readers, and then maybe publish that this year too. So
that sounds cool. What are you, Ryan?
I'm in the middle of a release of a trilogy in cooperation with Athon Books right now, and so I think book two just dropped last week, and then book three will be dropping, I believe, on Valentine's Day. So,
oh, wow.
If you're looking for something to cuddle up with, choose my trilogy.
I like that. That's a good tagline.
What's the name?
I don't think it is actually a good tagline, but Rise of Shadow, Josiah.
It's romantic. Jacqueline, what about you? Next.
So book two and three are finished of the Riverfall Chronicles, the sequels for Bookwire Watch, and then I'm working on book number four right now. It's about to go to my editor for the first copyright proofread thing. Totally forgetting how to speak English right now. First kind of official edits. So that's what I'm working on is number four right now.
Hell yeah. What about you, RK?
I am currently working on the sequel to Rival Most Vile. I'm hoping I can get that out this October. But this March, I'm releasing Spirit Well, which is the sequel to The Stray Spirit. I think my newsletter folks just got the cover reveal today, and then the cover reveal for that for social media will be next Monday.
That's so cool. I have the book two and four of Mercies that I'm working on. And the working title for that is The Diplomacy of the Knife. And the ending is probably the meanest thing I'll ever do if it sticks through revisions. Real quick, we are gonna have to go back around to everyone, just so we can let you so you can let everyone know where people can find you. You can find me at CM Kaplan Writes on Twitter and the CM Kaplan literally everywhere else. And then the books are on Amazon, I guess, and on Audible. And then we'll jump to RK.
Yeah, I am RK Ashwick Books on Instagram and TikTok. I've got a newsletter, and you can find that books wide. So not just Amazon, but Barnes & Noble, blah, blah, blah.
All right.
And then I have my website, jacquelinehagen.com, and it's got links to all my social media. And my books are also wide, and there are audiobooks if you are an audiobook listener.
Yeah, RyanKirkAuthor.com. That's probably the easiest place to go to find everything. I'm also wide, so you can find my books wherever you like to get your books.
Phenomenal.
So I'm Kate Andrews on Facebook, Instagram, and then Twitter. It's KeAndrews95 because that was already taken apparently. And I have a website, KeAndrews.org. My ebooks are just on Amazon at the moment, and then the physical copies are wide, so you can find those. Also, I have an Etsy shop, so some of them are on my Etsy shop.
Ooh. That's cool.
I'm pretty easy to find on socials, just WenRaven. Same with the website, WenRaven.com. And my books are on Amazon right now, and it's on KU at the moment. So for anybody who has that wants to read for free.
Hell yeah.
Best place to find me is probably just jdlroselle.com. You can find my social links on there. My ebooks and audiobooks are Amazon and Audible, but hoping to change that for some of the books this year. So
we'll put it.
I've got a website. It's just ecgreaves.com. It's also funny to Google me, but like instead of Ed Greaves, just Google Ed Greaves with a Z. I'm sure there's old videos of me and my band that are fun.
Oh, that'll be fun.
There's more interesting That's stuff awesome. Than me on the internet about me than there is about my books. So probably look for that instead if you care. But yeah, I'm on Twitter as well. My books are on Amazon, KU, whatever it's called. I think they're wide for the physical versions, but I'm in New Zealand, so like we don't really buy books here anyway. So, yeah.
All right. Yeah. And I think that is everything. I do not have an outro. I should have written an outro.
All right. Yeah. Subscribe, comment, leave
a
comment.
Yeah. Like, subscribe, smash that like button, ring the bell, or whatever the hell we say this at this point anymore. Yeah. Well, what Crystal said, thanks for coming to TBRCon.